The views expressed on the following program are the views of the show's host and do not necessarily reflect the views of this radio station, their management, their donors, their underwriters, nor their seventh-born sons. Broadcasting from KHUH LP 104.9 FM Seattle, it is time for the Thunderbolts. Yes, kids, there you were, enjoying your privileged white status, blissfully ignorant of the fact that your shoes were manufactured by a child slave, until one day you turned on your radio and you were struck by the Thunderbolt! Hello, Cascadia! It's time to wake up! Yes, you better grab that cup of coffee, because you are about to be struck by the thunderbolt of truth and justice. Here it comes. Yes, kids, the thunderbolt is your guide to activism in Thurston County. I have news. I have commentary, I have a calendar for activist-related events, kick-ass music, and dumb jokes! So Cascadia is off of the couch and into the streets! It's time to save civilization from fiery apocalypse! Though even the apocalypse is gonna have to wait until I have had a cup of coffee! All right, greetings to you, and welcome to the Thunderbolt for March 12th, 2021, where we leaven profound political insights with fart jokes.
Coming up next on the Terrence and Philip Thanksgiving special, Philip farts on Terrence and laughs.
Oh, cool.
The news and commentary section of this week's show originally aired on January 18th, 2019, and what with the imminent demise of the oil industry, the first half of this week's rerun is dedicated to an historical review of how the oil industry started and a review of the vital role that oil played in the development of the 20th century. A very slippery slope. And for the second half of this week's show, we review the distribution of the wealth that our oil economy was largely responsible for creating. A slippery slope, lubricated with a whole bunch of oil. So, let's do this. During the mid-19th century, there was a literal traveling snake oil salesman who wandered the northeastern United States calling himself Dr. Bill Livingston, celebrated cancer specialist. Yes, he was one of those good-looking, charming sociopaths whose genius lied in an incredible ability to completely dupe large numbers of people. He was not a doctor. He was not celebrated. Quite the opposite, in fact. He was not a cancer specialist. The magic cure that he peddled was a useless mixture of laxative and petroleum. And Livingston was not even his real name. He had been forced to adopt that nom de guerre after being indicted for rape in Cayuga, New York in 1849. As a result, this gentleman was forced, by self-created circumstance, to stay in constant motion, as in addition to the numerous cancer sufferers that he had conned, he had also abandoned his first wife and their six children for a bigamous marriage in Canada at the very same time that he was also fathering two more children by yet a third woman. And this gentleman regularly beat all of his women and all of his children. And as for the philosophy underlying such parenting techniques, not Dr. Not Livingston himself put it quite succinctly. I cheat my boys every chance I get, because I want to make them sharp. Not Dr. Not Livingston called himself Big Bill, but everyone else called him Devil Bill. So listeners may now be wondering why I just spent time in a contemporary radio show describing some loathsome two-bit con artist from the 19th century. Well, I did it because it turns out that Devil Bill Livingston, celebrated cancer specialist, played a large hand in shaping and molding the foundational base of treachery, deceit, illegality, and murder that literally defines the modern American reality. I did it because in many ways, our modern economic model was literally formed and shaped by Dr. Devil Bill Livingston. For you see, Devil Bill's actual name was William Avery Rockefeller. One of William Avery Rockefeller's numerous progeny was John D. Rockefeller, who, fresh from his childhood full of numerous and repeated lessons upon how to cheat and swindle people, would go on to found the Standard Oil monopoly. John D. Rockefeller was destined to use that power to shape a large part of the 20th century, and he was destined to transform the economy of the United States into Dr. Devil Bill Livingston's very image. Well, I think that it's about time we adopt a new image. During the early 19th century, there was a booming salt industry in Pennsylvania, centered upon the Pittsburgh area. Now, this salt was distilled from local brine wells, wherein saltwater wells were drained. The water was evaporated, and the resultant salt residue made more than one fortune for local entrepreneurs. However, one of the main problems the local salt barons experienced was that a contaminant kept poisoning their salt wells. And indeed, many of the wells were shut down out of fear that this poison would spread. Well, this poison is now known to us as crude oil. Anyway, in the early 1850s, a Pittsburgh druggist named Samuel Keir, K K-I-E-R, tried putting the stuff to use by selling bottled oil from his father's brine wells. And he marketed it as Pennsylvania rock oil, which some believe had medicinal qualities. Yet in spite of a spate of successful snake oil salesmen that were operating in the area at the time, Mr. Keir's operation met with an almost complete lack of success. He was about to sell his wells when he heard about the work of a whale oil dealer named Colonel A.C. Ferris, who had used his processes to convert a small amount of Keir's tonic into a lighter oil that burned well in oil lamps. So when Keir heard about this, he began using a one-barrel whiskey still of his own to convert his rock oil into lamp oil. And then a New York lawyer named George Bissell heard of Keir's operation, and Mr. Bissell sought and received financial backing from banksters such as James Townsend in 1854. And with these funds, he formed the Pennsylvania Rock Oil Company, which later became the Seneca Oil Company. Then Mr. Bissell met an unemployed railroad conductor named Edwin Drake. And Mr. Drake managed to charm himself into a job. Now, Drake's only qualification for his assignment was that he still had a free railroad pass from his previous job. And he thus saved Bissell and his partners the expense of paying the travel expenses involved in sending a prospector to Pennsylvania. And thus, Colonel, quote, Edward Drake, traveled to Titusville, Pennsylvania. The Colonel had been attached to Mr. Drake's name purely for purposes of PR and to impress the locals. And upon arrival, Colonel Drake stated that he was representing the Pennsylvania Rock Oil Company and that he was there on a quest for oil. Well, the locals thought that Colonel Drake was nuts. There was oil literally seeping out of the ground all over the place. And the locals had always viewed it as an annoyance at best and downright dangerous at worst. So at first, Mr. Drake tried damming the seat and then skimming the oil from the pools. But he found that he could only produce 6 to 10 gallons per day using this method, which was not enough to be profitable. And thus, the Pennsylvania Rock Oil Company quickly became a gusher of lost money. And as their investment continued to disappear, the financial backers gradually became much less patient and much more concerned. And so Mr. Drake finally tried one last desperate measure.
Size I shamed, was left as a child.
He hired a Pittsburgh blacksmith named Billy Smith, who is experienced at drilling brine wells with steam-powered equipment. And they began the process of drilling through the bedrock near one of the oil seeps to see if it was possible to extract oil in such a manner. And on Monday, August 28, 1859, the very day that Colonel Drake received his final payment, along with an order to shut his operation down, Mr. Smith and his son hitched the walking beam to a water pump. And as Mr. Smith later described it, I commenced drilling, and at 4 o'clock, I struck the oil. I says to Mr. Drake, "Look there. What do you think of this?" He looked down the pipe, and he said, "What is that?" And I said,
"Everybody's looking at the sky.
Sir, that is your fortune." And Drake's well thus proved that oil could be found in abundance, and that it could be produced cheaply, and thus an entire new industry was born almost overnight. However, in spite of Billy Smith's prediction, discovering oil did not bring fortune to Colonel Edward Drake. Quite the contrary. It turned out that while Mr. Drake may have been a visionary, he was not a businessman. Even though Edward Drake gave rise to a multi-billion dollar global industry that was soon basically running the whole frigging planet, Mr. Drake himself never bothered to take out a patent upon his drilling technique, nor did he even bother to purchase the land that surrounded his well.
Should I go or should I
stay? Thus, Edward Drake,
'cause what we got ain't working anyway,
watched everyone else cashing in upon his discovery, even as he himself was plunged into poverty. Mr. Drake, he spent the rest of his life living on charity, and he died penniless in 1880. No, all of the vast riches that the Pennsylvania oil rush ended up producing mostly went into the pocket of a gentleman named John D. Rockefeller. Yes, families such as the Rothschilds and the Nobels and the Dutch royal family and the Rockefellers, these early titans of the oil industry and their corporate shells,
Medicine Man,
pioneered a new model for amassing and expanding fortunes hitherto unheard of.
Medicine Man.
They were the scions of a new oligarchy, one that was built around oil and its control from wellhead to pump. But it was not just about money.
1 minute, please.
No.
The monopolization of the key energy resource of the entire 20th century helped secure the oligarchs not just wealth, but even more importantly, with power over the lives of literally billions of people who came to depend upon this black Rockefeller gold for the provision of just about every aspect of their daily lives. The rest of the story I have documented numerous times here in the Thunderbolt. John D. Rockefeller used cutthroat business tactics to gain a monopoly on American energy resources and used those resources to suck our country dry. He became the world's first billionaire when, as punishment for operating a cutthroat monopoly, his Standard Oil Company was split up into numerous smaller companies. When the press made John D. Rockefeller out to be a sociopathic monster who was responsible for many of the ills facing the overall society, Mr. Rockefeller responded by forming the Rockefeller Foundation, which began showering money upon worthy causes whilst simultaneously showering much more money advertising the fact that his foundation was showering so much money upon so many worthy causes. Thus, rather than being known as the brutal exploiter of billions of people, John D. Rockefeller instead became known as a philanthropist. All of this stuff also ties into World War I and World War II and the police state and the deep state and the Cold War and even eventually to bitcoins and smart grids. And all of everything is all intertwined within a reality that a lot of really messed up people have imposed upon us. And what people need to understand is that the 0.1% does not need to control our individual actions and reactions in order to control everything else. They merely need to control the base reality from which all of those actions and reactions spring.
It's midnight.
For decades, they have used our schools, they have used our pulpits, and especially they have used our media to do just that. John D. Rockefeller was a central player in the destruction of our world. But a man is a man. He could not have done what he did without millions of other people playing into the fiction that people such as John D. Rockefeller create.
Why is everybody always picking on me?
In order to get away with such crap, such people must impose their deep crazy upon the rest of us in order to, quote, normalize their actions. Yes, in order for their pyramid scam to work, they must enforce upon the rest of us a reality that has almost nothing to do with anything that is actually real. Money is actually worthless pieces of paper. And those pieces of paper are only valuable
midnight.
Because everyone pretends that they are valuable. If everyone quit pretending they were valuable, then they would be worthless. And what all this means is that if everyone would simply stop thinking that all of this crazy is real, then all of this crazy would no longer be real. Why do the rest of us continue doing the actual work of actually destroying the vital environmental infrastructure that makes our continuing existence upon this planet even possible? Why do we keep joining their armies and their police forces to help them brutally oppress people, most of whom intend us no harm whatsoever? Why do we allow the small handful of psychopaths that are always instigating all of this crazy to exclusively enjoy the fruits and the temporary wealth that their crazy is creating? Even as most of the people who are actually producing all of this wealth and the people who are actually doing all of the dying for all of these causes, why are most of those people living wretched lives of financial, educational, and spiritual poverty? That is crazy. We are humans. We can do almost anything that we want to do. So why are we doing this? Or, the more relevant question, what do we want to do instead? I can certainly think of a few things. And while we're thinking about that, we're going to take a quick station break. We'll be back in just a minute. The views expressed on this program are strictly those of the show's producers and do not necessarily reflect the views of this radio station nor anyone associated with this radio station. And now, back to the Thunderbolt. I once worked outside for 12 hours in a wind-driven rain. I was covered head to toe in top-quality Gore-Tex rain gear. But I discovered that even top-quality Gore-Tex rain gear starts leaking after 8 hours of wind-driven rain, and thus I spent the last 4 hours of my shift being cold and miserable. However, after my shift was done, I had a place where I could immediately go change into dry clothes and to get warm. So imagine enduring the weather we've been having around here lately whilst living in a tent in a parking lot downtown. Especially if, as is the case in many cases, that tent isn't of top quality and it starts leaking and everything you own gets wet and you wake up cold and shivering in the middle of the night, knowing that there is absolutely nowhere that you can go to get dry or to get warm until the rescue mission opens up at 6:30. Well, this is happening all over downtown Olympia every time it rains, and similar such things are happening everywhere across our country every hour of every day and every minute of every night. Most of those folks in other places do not have access to rescue missions or to community care centers. So in some ways, our local population is lucky.
So the next time you wake up in your nice warm house and look out the window and see that wind-driven rain is knocking down tree branches, imagine if instead you woke up every morning without any heat or any walls or any windows to protect you from that wind-driven rain. But go out and try it sometime and see how long you last. It turns out that there may be hope for those of you who tire of living in wet misery, though. For it would seem that there are numerous openings for high-level positions in the Trump administration. Current positions include Chief of Staff, Attorney General, Secretary of the Interior, Secretary of Defense, the Office of Management and Budget, Ambassador to the United Nations, Administrator of the EPA, and Secretary of the Treasury. Now, normally, people are willing to slice other people's throats open to obtain these positions. But the rump is having difficulty finding anyone who wants to take them. So this may be your golden opportunity. And yet another golden career opportunity may await you at the Pentagon. You probably don't remember this, but on September 10th, 2001, Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld made the following announcement. According to some estimates, we cannot track 2.3 trillion with a T dollars in transactions at the Pentagon. At the time he revealed this shocking information, Rumsfeld's comment upon that was that America's adversary was not China or Russia, but rather closer to home. It is, in fact, the Pentagon bureaucracy. Rumsfeld also warned that tracking down of these missing transactions could be, quote, a matter of life and death, unquote. However, note the date of Rumsfeld's announcement. September 10th, 2001. The firestorm created by Rumsfeld's exposé totally died the next morning. And since 9/11, there has been no follow-up and no effort made to find all that missing money. And there's a lot more of that money that has gone unaccounted for since that time. The U.S. military regularly receives a bigger budget than even they ask for, and all kinds of massive and very expensive programs that no one actually wants or needs are constantly shoved down their collective military contractors' throats. And best of all, the military gets to spend all that cash in any manner whatsoever that they may wish, and they never need to account for hardly any of it.
Here in the words, can you hear?
For several decades now, the Pentagon has failed to audit itself. And this is even though the Pentagon receives 54 cents out of every dollar in federal appropriations. And even though there are many trillions of dollars that have been documented to have simply disappeared over the last many years. When Congress recently hired some outside bookkeeping firms to attempt an audit, these firms concluded that the DOD's financial records were so riddled with bookkeeping deficiencies, irregularities, and errors that anything even remotely resembling a reliable audit was simply an impossible task. The Pentagon has the equivalent of a blank check. Well, The Nation magazine has conducted an investigation, and you're never gonna believe what they found. Surprise, surprise. It turns out that for decades, the DOD's leaders and accountants have been perpetrating a massive accounting fraud. I'm shocked. They have been deliberately cooking the books to mislead the Congress, and they have relentlessly driven the DOD's budgets ever higher, and those numbers completely disregarded any hint of actual military necessity. I can't believe it. The DOD has literally been making up numbers in its annual financial reports to Congress. And those numbers literally represent trillions of dollars worth of seemingly non-existent transactions. Who would have thought? And Congress, of course, relies upon those reports whilst making their decisions upon how much money to give to the Department of Defense each year. What a coincidence! Inside the Pentagon, these phony numbers are often referred to as plugs, as when you plug a hole. In fiscal year 2015, Congress appropriated $122 billion for the U.S. Army. Yet DOD financial records for the Army's 2015 budget included a whopping $6.5 trillion, yes, trillion with a T, in plugs. That was literally over 30 times their total budget, all in plugs. Well, what, where, when, how did these trillions of dollars in plugs exist? Well, the Office of the Inspector General put it this way. Most of these plugs lacked supporting documentation. Wow. Someone should give that guy an Understatement of the Year award or something. A research team spent months poring over DOD financial records, and they found that in all, at least a mind-boggling $21 trillion of Pentagon financial transactions between 1998 and 2015 could not be traced, documented, or explained. $21 trillion is roughly 5 times more than the entire federal government spends in a year. $21 trillion is greater than the entire United States gross national product. It is also very important to keep in mind that $21 trillion includes only the plugs,
that were discovered in reports by the Office of the Inspector General, which reviews only part of the total of Pentagon spending. So get this. No one knows for sure how the biggest single line item in the U.S. federal budget is actually being spent. What's more, Congress as a whole has shown little interest in investigating this epic scandal. And just to shock you further, this could be because the same people perpetrating these frauds and these contracts are also the biggest campaign contributors to these very same politicians who make these decisions. And thus these absurd plugs are never even mentioned in Armed Services or Budget Committee hearings. Now this should be the major scandal and the major issue of our time, but is being completely ignored by those in power, both in Congress and in the media. And that is how deep this corruption runs. So if you ever want any money for any of the many things that we actually need, well, I can recommend a good source. For now, though, it's time to get to work. All right. And for this week's music selection, I'm going to feature Olympia's own Kimya Dawson. Enjoy.
Yeah, motherfuckers! Kimya fucking Dawson! What? What you f***ing at now?
As I sit and listen to a kid you clearly influenced, I text and say I'm glad that you're my friend. Then leave another perfect house show feeling inspired and powerful to go through corporate future in my head. And as I count the ways that I said f*** you to the man, I don't care if things that I've sold out or not. Since going barefoot, I feel better, and Regina f***ing Spector is a name I'll never be ashamed to drop. I saw that little weirdo walk into the open mic, sit down shyly at the piano and then start singing songs with strong and knowing, silly sad and so mind-blowing, they were undeniably straight from the heart. And the music, it doesn't change, though the songs remain the same. Whether there are zero people or there are a zillion people in the world, you are listening. Yeah, the music, it doesn't change, though the songs remain the same. Whether there are zero people or there are a zillion people in the world, you are listening. I have a friend named Ava, 17, she's a soprano. She sings opera with a voice that makes me cry. But she sings in competitions and the kids at school give her shit. I wish that she could step back and close her eyes and feel the vibration of her voice inside her chest without worrying about who thinks that she thinks she's the best. Well, it's hard when there are people who think that it's not enough and there are people who think that it went too far. All I ever wanted was to not feel suicidal and I traded in my meds for a guitar. There's so much depression nowadays in adolescence and with all the social pressure that makes sense. But music shouldn't be the problem, music should be the solution and only a positive experience. Because the music, it doesn't change, though the songs remain the same. Whether there are zero people or there are a zillion people in the world who are listening. Yeah, the music, it doesn't change, though the songs remain the same. Whether there are zero people or there are a zillion people in the world who are listening. I have a friend named Johnny D. His band is Tindry Factory. Everything he does is gold to me, and it's on archive.org for free. That's www.archive.org. I like sitting on the floor watching Johnny play on his knees on a carpet, not on a stage, in front of a fire in a living room. And warm, full of potluck food. But if one day suddenly Johnny got huge, I'd be glad that you knew Johnny too. His songs
Tina's only true fan, just because I knew her way back when. And you think Cat Stevens couldn't be my god, cause I heard him first in Harold and Maude. I bought all his albums, I listened, I cried. Teaser and the Fire Cat changed my life. I painted a fire cat on my jean jacket, drew peace trains on my homework packet. I'm still listening to the wind of my soul, and I'm a hard-headed woman, so I've been told. Yeah, music's just sound, we're just ears. Why are you affected by what who hears? If Michael Jackson's hits make him less sacred, you taking your clothes off makes me less naked. When you watch Teach preach, I'll make it or break it. Do you want to abstain?
No.
Repeat after me.
Master blasted, lost my id, my anti-entity. And just because it's real to you, it isn't, not pretend to me. And did you know my elbow taught me positively everything I never didn't know about double negativity? Have you been unfollowed for misogynistic dickiness? Sitting home alone in a pool of your own stickiness, jerking off to your own tweets, iPhone on the share, while you insult everybody else for what they write on Twitter. My delivery is speedy, can you McFeel me? Banana midriff, so appealing. Head is in the clouds and my feet are on the ceiling. The foundation is much uglier than what it is concealing. My delivery is speedy, can you McFeel me? Banana midriff, so appealing. Head is in the clouds and my feet are on the ceiling. The foundation is much uglier than what it is concealing.
Here's a little bit of Miami advice for when your hand is down your pants and there's a gun between your eyes and she cocks it the minute you cream your jeans. You say, baby, do you wanna ride my sound machine? She'll say no, but she'll laugh and drop the gun, I think, and say, do you wanna hear the story behind my new ink? And she'll say, hey little man, why can't you see there is no spark? Take off your socks, put on your shoes, go get eaten by a shark. If I don't set aside time for writing songs, I go insane. The stuff that's left unsaid just turns to static in my brain. It's hard to get things done when my head is full of craziness. It's when I am the busiest that I seem the laziest. I'm sending off my monkeys on the backs of the pink elephants, so it doesn't matter if my lyrics are irrelevant. Tossing out my thoughts like handfuls of confetti at a little strummy strum, and I feel better already.
My delivery is speedy, can you McFeel me? Banana midriff, so appealing. Head is in the clouds and my feet are on the ceiling. The foundation is much uglier than what it is concealing. My delivery is speedy, can you McFeel me? Banana midriff, so appealing. Head is in the clouds and my feet are on the ceiling. The foundation is much uglier than what it is concealing.
I was feeling overrated, I was feeling undersmarted when you looked me in the eye. And then it smelled like someone farted. Was it man or was it beast? Or was it just my upper lip? Was it an Olympia hippie or a New York City hipster? What's the difference? As we all try hard to make this world better, if it's thrift or if it's vintage, it is still your grandpa's sweater. Either way, three cheers for you, cause it's better to reuse than to support the corporations buying crap they mass produce. You think
You think I'm preaching to the choir, but I am not. I'm singing with the choir. We are all birds, birds of a different feather. We each sing the way we sing, and we are all in this together. You think I'm preaching to the choir, but I am not. I'm singing with the choir. We are all birds, birds of a different feather. We each sing the way we sing, and we are all in this together.
Tune was called Miami Advice, and before that we had Zero or a Zillion from Kimya Dawson. We'll see you next week. The Thunderbolt is a production of Dancing Angel Media, which is solely responsible for the content. Neither the stations that air the Thunderbolt, their sponsors, their members, their underwriters, nor anyone else that has much to do with anything else in any way, is responsible for the content of the Thunderbolt, nor do they necessarily agree with the views expressed on the Thunderbolt. If you have any comments, or if you wish to express an opposing opinion, you should send an email to dana98501@gmail.com, and we will make arrangements. And I hope that you have a day. And you may want to grab a pen or something, because I'm about to give you some information. If you like what you hear here on the Thunderbolt, then the Thunderbolt archives are stored at dana98501.wordpress.com. That's D-A-N-A 98501, which is the downtown Olympia zip code, .wordpress.com. And if you would like to continue hearing the Thunderbolt, you can contribute to our cause at patreon.com/thethunderbolt. And
thank you very much.